C1B, 1 and 2.
Number 8B.
So we come to the tone of life as soul. Once I have seen which one is the real life and which one is the elusive life, I feel then, in that case, I rise above the mortal sense of life into the spiritual sense of life. My caption here is a higher level. Can you see soul? A higher level of existence cannot be gained through death, but only through what? A spiritual sense, soul of life. Life, can you hear? Life as soul. That which resurrects me out of a mortal body, out of a mortal concept of man, is spiritual understanding, a spiritual sense of life. In that spiritual sense of life, there is no death. And this is quite a nice point here, that she says that we are not winning eternal life by dying, as perhaps religious belief would tell us, that if you die, you go into heaven, hope for the best, and therefore death is a friend. Therefore, death is the threshold through which you go and then you get into the paradise. And she says, no, you can't go through something negative and expect to happen something positive. So she says, without an understanding of man's being, mortals cannot rise higher through the experience of death. Mortals will still seek happiness through a material sense of life afterwards if they would do that. If we don't lose a material sense of life, then death doesn't bring us more. We still would have a material sense of life, of happiness and joy. But she says, a spiritual sense of life, if we have that, on such, the second death has no power. The side note is, death of no advantage. So here she brings out what really constitutes resurrection. That resurrection is not something that we gain by going through death, but that actually it is a question of rising spiritually. That is resurrection. Not going through death and then trying to resurrect ourselves out of it. We'll see that very soon. Thought is then led further to principle. So what would we expect in principle if we see that the idea that is under consideration is immortality, we would have to see that immortality is something that has a principle behind itself and therefore must be demonstrated, whereas on a human basis we feel we can only really gain immortality through God's pardon. And you have here principle presented as those two methods of demonstration. In the positive, in Christian Science, we have a principle to demonstrate, whereas if we regard life as personal and therefore have a personal God, we can only get somewhere through divine pardon. Sorry, through pardon, not through divine pardon. Through pardon, that God pardons us. Religion has no other way of rising out of a problem and rising higher except praying to God that God will pardon us and forgive us. Whereas principle says you must demonstrate your principle and therefore demonstrate your wholeness. So you have there really the principle as on one side demonstrate and on the other side pardon. The subject is evolved like this. She speaks about that death is not a means for divine pardon. That we can't say, well, if we die, then everything is over and everything is forgotten and then everything is okay again, so let's get rid of the whole misery in our life by death, then I forget it, then it's over, nobody talks about it anymore, and it's finished. And she said, no, death, life, does not really bring about the divine pardon principle. She says, thus, death does not destroy the belief in sickness, sin and death. The unrighteous will be still unrighteous, and so sin does not cease at the instant of death, he goes on, apparently even sin goes on, and sin and error endure, actually endure, can you see the tone of life, endure, until what point, till what time, until the death of these errors. So one can see what she is bringing out. She says, look here, there is only a progress possible into eternal life, not by asking pardon, and that death would be a pardon. But what you have to do is to demonstrate over everything that is ungodlike, and through demonstrating really this, you kill the error. It is the death of error, and not your death. Again, she asks, how then is perfection won? Through perfection. Perfection is won through perfection. Principle is won through principle. Principle demonstration is won through principle demonstration. Not through pardon, not through death. So death doesn't do anything to us. We can't expect anything from death. Why can't we expect anything from death? Because it doesn't exist. If something doesn't exist, it isn't anything. So how can that which is nothing give us anything or take away anything? It cannot give us anything nor take away anything from us. Therefore, she demands the divine pardon for sin, and under divine pardon of sin, she understands that we really demonstrate God. So divine pardon is not won through death, but by giving up sin. She says, not through God's pardon, because God does never pardon, but through the destruction of sin. Well, as you think over that tone, you will feel very definitely, here it is a question, how can we win immortality? Not through death, but through, and not through pardon, that's life as principle, but by demonstration, principle, we win really the divine pardon, and therefore our indestructibility. We go to life. Now, if we go to life, life as life, what on earth would we expect here? If we see that the subtone of life would have to show us something about the eternality of life, about life that knows no death. And so I think what she presents here is that life is gained through, not through death, through progression and probation, not through death. Here, life, as life demands, if you want to have life, you must have progression, you must have probation. It's a beautiful sense here that says, life means gone, gone, gone. Let's go on. Let's go ever on and on and on. And on we go, and on we go. At the moment we feel, oh no, something new again. Oh no, oh no. I have learned so much in my life, and I have settled my life now so nicely, and the cat is purring, and the flowers are nice in the garden, so, oh no, that's death. Those are the living deaths, dead. Life is going on. That's the progression of life. Therefore, the moment we feel within ourselves a desire no more to learn, no more to learn something new, no more to change, no more to get a new paradigm, no more to acquaint ourselves with a new idea, then we know we are dead. We are dead. Yes, because the Bible says really that, how does it say, that how the, in the place that the tree falls, there it shall be. Yes, as man falls asleep, Mrs. Eddy says, so shall he awake, which means death doesn't do a trick. It doesn't bring us further, nor does it bring us backward. It's the mentality we entertain that must be life. And the newness of life is that mentality to know more and more and more. I don't know if you have read that book or those books on life after life. And one thing that impressed me very much about the people who died and then came back, that most of the people said, that they came back with a terrific desire to learn. Because when they were on the other side, what they experienced was that everything was understandable and became understandable. And that they had a great drive to understand and to know and to learn. And many of these people that came back, no matter what age they were, they went to school again, took instructions again, and wanted to learn and learn. This is this point here, that we must have that flexibility always to be new in our consciousness. That's the newness of life. Not to try to put something new into the old bottles and be happy with the old bottles. Why did Jesus say what life is? He always said, this is life eternal, that ye shall know God and Jesus Christ and so on and so on. See, he always defined life through knowing God. Therefore, the more we know God, the more life we have. Therefore, we can never stop desiring to know God, to learn about being, because that's life. And I think those who have that inner longing, that inner drive, always somehow stay young. So, how does Mrs. Eddy evolve this question here? She says, as death finds mortal men, so shall he be after death. So, we can't expect much from death. What then is it that brings salvation? What then is it that brings us forward to the newness of life? And she says, it is progression and probation. Probation and growth shall affect every change. And I think we could say that, if you look back on our lives, that we could say, actually it is so. We have gone through various deaths in our lives. Every time when we accepted a completely new paradigm and left the old paradigm behind, we felt we are a new creature. We felt as living in another world, in a new world. And it isn't so, actually, that we all live in the same world. We live next door to each other, but as we live in our consciousness, everyone has a different world, and we are not living in the same world. And if our consciousness is more spiritual, we live naturally again in a more spiritual universe, and therefore we can see that we all live, so to say, intersected in the same universe, but everyone having his own universe. Therefore, spiritual living is right here and now. And if we have not conceived of life in and of spirit, we are not aware of that life which is just right here in this room, that universe, that completely different universe that is right here in this room. We can't see it. And there is a universe of spiritual being right here where we are that is higher, that is more progressive. We cannot perceive it because we have not somehow elevated or lifted our consciousness to the purely spiritual sense of life. So she says, then what is then really heaven? That realm after death, which people feel they would attain. And she said, it is right here and now, namely, it is a divine state of mind, capital M. Heaven is not a place to go. Heaven is not a time which we at one time will meet. Heaven is an isness, a state of mind. And so she asked, therefore, to be in the possession of the mind of the Lord. And you can see life as life is always asking that we know God and that is life eternal. And we can only know God how? Only through the divine mind. Only through the divine mind. That is the only knowing of God. The human mind can never really perceive God. Therefore she makes that terrific statement here where she says, no resurrection from the grave awaits mind or life. We are always concerned and say, wonder, couldn't I resurrect from the grave. You know, there was a Jesus, and apparently he has been in a grave, and he came out of it, he rolled away the stone and came out of it. Why couldn't we do that? Why shouldn't we do that? And we haven't seen anybody else afterwards who did it. Well, is there a resurrection from the grave? And she says, no, there isn't. Because you can never put mind and life into a grave. Because you can't put it into it, it cannot be resurrected. So you better don't put it into it. If you put it into it, it stays there. So no resurrection from the grave awaits mind and life. Nobody really can prevent us to be the idea of mind and the idea of life. Nobody. It all depends on our consciousness. And that consciousness would say, at the point of life as life, never put life into a grave. Never put life into death. See that life is always spiritual, right above, right exalted, above everything, and stay there. Then you make progression. Can you see how wonderful the new system of reference is? That new paradigm is. The old paradigms of religious belief and religious belief in Christian Science would say, how are we going to demonstrate over death? You know, if somebody stands up in the church and would say, I have demonstrated overcoming death, that is really something. Then the whole movement speaks about it. Isn't it the bigger demonstration not to believe that life can be in the grave? That's a bigger demonstration. But actually it is a question of understanding it and not of stating it. Then if we understand it and really see that we have been before Abraham was, and if we really see that we have never been born into this body, then we don't need to get out of that body, we don't need any resurrection from the grave. All that is solved. So why go all around the bush? Why not just see the straight line and see, I start at the beginning. I start at the principle, at the foundation. That immortality rests on the foundation of a principle. There I start. And I begin to demonstrate that life which can never die. Nothing can make it die. No belief can make it die. No matter can make it die. No sense testimony can make it die. No authority can make it die. Nothing is big enough to make it die. It's just not possible. And these are the great deep questions we can somehow entertain within ourselves when we ponder really our divine system of reference. And then we really demonstrate something. Outwardly, they may put us then down. They only can put the body somewhere into a grave. But not us. That's no more possible. Nothing can put us anymore into a grave. Nobody can put a spiritual understanding of life and mind into a grave. Nobody can do that. So it's all a matter that we entertain that consciousness more and more as a reality, as a present consciousness, as a natural consciousness, not something that is supernatural, that is ephemeral, but that something that is absolutely scientific natural. And if we do that, then somehow we demonstrate life as truth, namely what she says here, that the divine judgment destroys error hourly and continually. This is overcoming the belief in death, that hourly, Paul says, I die daily, that's the death we have to consider, that every day, at every instant, we try somehow to the best of our abilities to see that every moment we try to overcome error with truth, to put in place of error the truth and truth's idea. That she calls the day of judgment. The judgment day of wisdom comes hourly and continually. And if we do that, then comes a time, a point, where we have done it completely, at the point of love, life as love, when the last mortal fault is destroyed, as it says, then the battle with mortality is ended, and the heights and depths of being are revealed. Then we got it. and we have overcome mortality. So when the last mortal fault is destroyed, when the final trump will sound, when the battle with mortality is ended, when will that be? She asks, when is that be? And she says something very interesting, the day and the hour knows no man. It's not up to decide that. Divine signs alone can compass the heights and depths of being. Can you see? And compass love, what? Being, life. So it is left to divine signs when that battle is over. She doesn't say it is left to Christian science, or to absolute Christian science. Because we know that in divine science, error is excluded. That only when our consciousness rises from Christian science to absolute Christian science, to divine science, that only at that point that consciousness does no more include a proposition of error. It does not include error, nor a proposition of error, nor a suggestion of error. It's therefore that point where we really can see through the point of life as truth, that if we feel consciousness more and more with truth, there is no error in our consciousness, therefore there is no error that has to die, and so we fill our consciousness so full with ideas that the suggestion of death, the suggestion of error, of mortality, does not even enter. And you know, this is not so far off. Don't say, well, this is a very high consciousness. Will I ever attain it? It's not so difficult as it seems at the moment. It's actually only a question of disciplining oneself to stay with the divine system of reference. That is all. Therefore, in the measure as we always try to look at everything from mind, from spirit, from soul, from principle, from life, from truth, from love, and not from any other standpoint. If we do that, we culture consciousness of divine science that knows no enemy, that knows no accuser. It just doesn't know it. And therefore, it is, as what Mrs. Eddy would say, a present possibility. It's only a question of discipline. That's all.